Hey, everybody, welcome to Shop Talk Show. We have two really great sponsors this week. Every week, Environments for Humans. They do conferences for web people, really cool ones. There's a couple coming up very soon that you should hear about. We'll tell you about that in a little bit here. And Majingo screencasts, also for web developers like us, Mijingo.com. Check it out. We'll tell you about some special new screencasts they have over there and a discount you can use a little later in the show.
Welcome to episode 42 of the Shop Talk Show podcast, a podcast all about web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hey, everybody.
And today is another very special episode. It's a
rapid fire show. We're doing mouth sounds this week a little bit. We upgraded to Mountain Lion recently, and it has some problems with our soundboard. So it's sad face, you guys, but don't worry about it. God, I almost like mouth sounds.
it's a Shop Talk Unplugged.
Yeah, indeed. So that'll come back someday, but we're going to do all kind of written questions this week. We, of course, prefer your audio questions in general, but just through some technical difficulties, we're going to be reading the questions this week. But yes, indeed is a rapid fire question. No guests, no drama, no links. We're just going to get into questions.
I should have bought a real gun and that we could shoot off.
At least cock it.
Okay, first question. Matt Tyus wrote in. He says, first up, love the show. We love you, Matt. As a longtime listener, first time emailer with a question about at extend and media queries in SAS. Okay, this is big business. Okay, so here we go. At extend is cool. And since we've discovered its power, myself and my colleagues have been messing with at extend and silent placeholders to try and get some ultra modular OOCSS going on. However, we recently ran into the problem that you cannot use at extend with media queries. There you go. This got us thinking, what is the correct usage for at extend? If you cannot use it in media queries, which is a big part of web design now, of course, I feel like we might find ourselves overriding at extend rules with normal CSS within media queries, which seems a little backward. Or should we just use at extend for clear fix or anything that will remain the same across viewport sizes? Excuse me if this is a muddled question. It has come from a muddled mind. Give a big shout out to the Webtina at Leeds University in Yorkshire, England, please. Shout out. Yeah. So I think you use extend way more than I do, Chris. So
I like extend. It's pretty neat. So if anybody is totally unfamiliar with it, it's a concept in SAS, which it's a little bit similar to a mix-in in that you're kind of like you have a chunk of CSS and you kind of want to use it somewhere else too. So you're like. You just write like you have. Let's say you have a class and it's called like grid 1/2 or something, and then you have some other selector somewhere else that you want to kind of use the same properties in there. So like float left and width 50% and all that stuff. But you want to use like a different name. You don't want to use the class name grid 1/2 for whatever reason. That's what a silent placeholder is. Be a class, but it's not really a class. It doesn't output anything. And then you have a more semantic selector called like. I don't know, article, recipes or something. And then you would like extend grid 1/2. So it's kind of an interesting little concept in SAS for that kind of thing. But it's not like a mix-in, which would just go grab those properties and spit them out. And then you use the mix-in later and it spits out the same stuff. And it's just a lot of repetitive stuff. That's what mix-ins do, which are also very useful. But extend kind of, well, just basically comma separate a bunch of selectors. Yeah, so it'll just be like anytime you've ever extended grid 1/2, it'll be like, okay, I see recipes has these properties, comma, blog articles, has the, you know, it just makes a big comma separated list of things to share those same styles. So it's a little bit more efficient than MixInsart. But you're correct in that it doesn't work within media queries of any kind. I kind of forget why, actually, which is a little embarrassing, but I think there's a pretty good reason. I think it just gets weird with specificity, I think, or something, or it was difficult to write into their parser. I'm not even sure exactly.
Yeah,
why.
I think the deal is, like, I could be way wrong. I'm going to just say I'm wrong on this, but you have like a variable inside of a variable at that point, or like maybe exact as like a buffer inside of a buffer. So you generated this buffer list of rules, and then it has to exist inside of a buffer. So it gets really weird from a program standpoint.
Yeah, I can see that.
A compiler standpoint. So I guess what do you think is the correct usage of extend then, Chris?
Well, just use it while you can. I mean, I don't know what else to say, really. Like, it's a very useful thing. Unfortunately, you can't use it within media queries, so don't use it within media queries, you know?
So I couldn't make like a silent placeholder class
within that media query
called tablet navigation, and because it wouldn't work inside the media query.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think you may need to just maybe break down your objects a bit more. That's tough to say, though, because you want to reuse stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
Matt says, you know, or should we just use it to, like, for clear fix and stuff like that? And absolutely, I do use it for clear fix all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably the best you can do. You're maybe repeating yourself a little bit, but
And so, like, what actually needs to be in media queries these days? it's stuff like redoing layout a bit and changing your typography a bit and stuff like that. That's the kind of thing that ends up in media queries and kind of belongs in media queries. But what about just establishing the base styles for like the modules on the site, you know, like the backgrounds and in the headers and a little box shadow, like that type of stuff probably doesn't change a bunch. Well, I hate to speak so generally like that, but you know what I mean? Like if you set up some module styles, you can extend the crap out of those because it's not the kind of thing that's changing in media queries a whole lot. So that stuff, you know, anything that just it doesn't matter that it's in a media query. Use extend outs.
Do mixins work in media queries?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's an option too. It may seem hacky or something to have like a mixin called at mixin tablet navigation or whatever. And you could then just spit those out. I'm still kind of old school in it. I don't take advantage of extend. That's stupid on my part, but
it's worth a blog post. Maybe I'll put that on the old list of like places where it like just makes a ton of sense to use extend, because I feel like it's a little abstract, and even in this answering this question, I don't think we did a very good job of selling it, but it is really, really cool. And the more people use it and grok it, I feel like the chances of it getting into real CSS is a possibility. And you know, the guys at SAS feel very strongly about this, that extend becomes very, very powerful as a concept, not in SAS, in actual CSS. Being able to extend it without having to muddle with your CSS, just have it just work, would be so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I would appreciate a quick wins with extend kind of post, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, cool. All right. Well, hopefully, Matt, that helps you out. Obviously, write in again if we mess that up. So anyway,
Matt McGlade asks, with latest releases of Google's Penguin and Panda, I actually don't know that much about this, but I assume they often name their updates to how their search algorithm works.
Yep. Yeah, those are their SEO names or their search algorithm names.
Yeah, right on. And so those are some new ones, I guess. I did read a little bit about this. I heard that, you know, like as ever, are trying to battle spam in better ways and change how links work and stuff. Anyway, there are issues with image replacement, apparently, all of a sudden. Again, classic issue in web design. I recently started using the HTML5 boilerplate CSS method, which is font size zero, essentially. It's like zero slash zero, which just kind of hides the text in there. It's invalid, technically, but no browser has a problem with it, so it's not a big deal. And he says, however, in Google's eyes, this is bad SEO and they will punish me for doing this. Or he says, if that's the case, should we go back to the old school method of just, I don't know. There's literally like a dozen image replacement ones that, you know, this is like old school CSS trick stuff there. I have like a roundup of all the different things and I gave him little report cards on which, what it was good at and what it wasn't good at. And there are a lot of ways. Honestly, my brain still goes to the negative text indent one.
I think for the negative text indent, the reason the boilerplate uses something different than that is because of
it draws an off-screen box or whatever.
Yeah, it basically draws an invisible box that's bigger than your computer. So that's bad for performance.
Technically, although some smart people looked at it and they looked at lots of browsers and it really wasn't a big deal. The only browser they could find that had any kind of performance hit at all that would be noticeable was the iPad 1 for some reason.
Mm.
So it's kind of one of those things like, I don't know. Is that still important enough?
Why do people write blog posts about non-problems? Anyway, we'll get over that one day.
Yeah. And then there was a thing about text indent 100%, which would also draw an off-screen box, but like not only as big as it needed to be.
Mm.
That got popular as it got blogged by Zeldman at one time. So a lot of people are writing about that. Matt, though, to answer this question, don't sweat it so bad, dude. Like these little tiny SEO details, and maybe I'm biased here because I just, I've never seen the, I don't know how to answer this. It's just not going to be that big of a deal. Maybe on like a brand new site and you're trying to eke any kind of juice out of there, but like I feel like one good like incoming link transcends any little dumb little change about text indent and stuff,
Yeah, and I mean like. The biggest use case here is like for a logo or something like that, If you're sweating that, don't because really like the website or Google knows the name of the company and they're not going to be like punish you because you tried to put the name of the company into the website. I feel like you just need to The rule of thumb I live by is if you're trying to be shady,
don't worry about it.
Yeah. If you have a title, that says, if your image replacing an image of a cat and you put download free Adobe, whereas, free software vectors, blah, 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 that's where you're going to get penalized. I know. I heard of a company that they thought they had it all figured out. Like they were totally optimized for Penguin, and then Panda came out and basically broke all their tricks, their little SEO tricks. And that's just to say, don't
I feel good that they got screwed.
Just build good websites, do the best you can do. And if you're doing shady crap, Google's going to bust you. That's kind of what they say on their videos over on YouTube and stuff like that. We're really intelligent and and again, Chris is saying, one link from a really reputable site will, more or less, overdo any sort of mistake you made in image replacement. So yeah,
if you're trying to do bad, worry about it. If you're honestly trying to do good, which you are, Matt, don't worry about it so much. This is funny. It reminds me of this thing that happened recently. I got an email. They sent me hello support, I have found a no follow link of our company on your blog. quote or square bracket CSSTricks.com on square bracket. The following page contains a link within the comments, and they send me a link, and they send the anchor text says Buffalo Web Design anchor link www.kunuzi.com. Yes, I'm outing you on the radio because you're jerks.
Boom.
And they're like, please remove the above link from our website because of the no-follow effect. Our website ranking is getting a negative effect. So you came to my website, left a spammy link in my comments, which normally I catch and delete, but this one happened to get through, and then emailed me requesting that it be removed because, because it's now affecting you negatively instead of positively. So I wrote back and said, hey, I'm going to delete that because it's spam and I don't allow spam on my website, but I'm also going to publish it on my blog. How terrible you are. Because that pisses me off. I feel strongly about, you know, if you're a spammer and coming to my website and actively trying to just fill it with garbage for your own benefit, I will do anything I can to tell the world that you suck.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Yeah. And I'll put a link in the show notes. I called the blog post Sweet Spammer Justice.
Yeah. and to Matt's credit, I mean, like we're all contractors and stuff, and sometimes you get asked, you know, like, hey, can we get like 800 white links in the footer, you know?
Yeah.
And like you're like, dude, that's a bad idea. And terrible for users. It's only good for the company or like for one dude in the company, like to like, cause he's an SEO wizard. Like you need to, I mean, there may be cases where you're just like, I'm just going to do it. Cause that, you know, pick your battles, but yeah. But again, if it, what you're doing is shady and you like, and your moral compass is going off, then it's a problem. So there you go. Use your,
Let me do this one real quick because it's let's see. DJ writes in and he asks about the Google style guide that we talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
In episode 38, and we didn't discuss anything specific, but apparently this is within the Google style guide. And I should have actually verified this. I didn't look at it, but apparently they kind of recommend not closing tags that are optionally not to be closed, which is okay in HTML5. And I'm not even talking about image tag, you know, like something like image has the slash closing tag at the end. I'm all about leaving those off recently because I don't care. I get it. Or inputs, you know, I don't self-close them anymore in HTML5. But they go beyond that and being like, don't even close paragraph tags. Just leave the slash P off the end of it because that's okay in HTML5 and it'll just close it for you.
That's interesting.
I think that's gross and weird and begging for trouble.
Yeah. I mean, if Google's doing it, it might be okay. But, man, I'd hate to be the developer after you. That's for sure. And I don't know. It sounds like they're over-optimizing. And that would not be my personal style guide whatsoever. So the example he gave is like a open P tag and then QED period. And then you don't even close the P tag. I mean, I don't know.
It's just dangerous. It's just, what if you then insert some other stuff and kind of forgot that you didn't close the P, but it starts like, it's just begging for trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and Google probably has something that like strips it out and does it like that way. Like they have some compiler, some closure based compiler or something, man. I don't know. I don't think Google's doing weird stuff to try to eke out optimization. Cause they're on the scale of billions, you know? So like a closing P tag is maybe it's 3 bytes, but times a billion page views, that's maybe a lot, you know? So
it's weird that it's in their style guide though. It's one thing if their closure compiler does it.
Yeah. I mean, I know I know their Google Plus buttons, the G Plus buttons have it's a G element. And we've talked about that on the show. That gives me the heebie jeebies. Just that like inventing elements like, oh, cool. Just insert the Pinterest tag and you have a Pinterest button, you know? Although that wouldn't be terrible, but it's, I don't know. It's weird. Life is weird. Yeah, so I'm just going to say I wouldn't do it, DJ, but you, I mean, if you want to, I'm not going to hire you. Whoa, burn. No. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think it's probably a mistake. It's an over-optimization. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like somebody just being like, I'm going to write this book in my own made-up language, you know, just because it works. Like, or I'm going to write a letter using only consonants because you'll be able to infer the vowels, you know. Yeah, I don't know. There's a balance to closing tags, you know.
Just do it.
That's my final answer. Ka-chuck! Next question is from Kartik Vadlap. Oh, I messed it up. Kartik.
You're usually really good at this.
Yeah, there's an extra vowel. Vadlapatla. Vadlapatla. I hope I said that, Kartik. Here we go. So I'm a designer and I would like to set up my own blog. However, I don't know any back-end languages like Ruby or PHP. So which platform would you guys suggest, WordPress or static site generators like Octopress? So,
yeah,
you know,
most people that have a blog. Yeah. So do you want to explain?
Yeah. So, okay. So, so if designer doesn't know Ruby or PHP or anything, so WordPress or like a static site generator like Octopress, WordPress is just, it powers the whole internet. It's written on PHP. Static site generators are usually like a command line tool that spit out static HTML into a website. Jekyll, Octopress is built on Jekyll kind of thing. So which one is best? This is a good question.
Well, it's just, I'm a designer and would like a blog. I feel like how many bloggers in the world know Ruby or PHP? None, you know, like it, not none, but well, very few in the world. You don't need to know these. Yeah. Certainly a static site generator is a little more hardcore. Like if you don't know any programming stuff at all, I think that's going to be a little, a big step, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't even care, like, why don't you just go to Squarespace and start a blog, or you could go to WordPress.com and know nothing, you know? But he starts the question with, I'm a designer. So maybe you want to, you know, eke out some like hardcore control over.
Yeah. I would assume if you're a designer, you want to, you know, you want to have like kind of an extreme layout or something really designed. What I would recommend in this vein is maybe Tumblr. You know, Tumblr seems kind of like, you know, it's just pictures of cats or whatever, or, you know, Reddit memes or something like that. That might be great. The templating language for Tumblr is really easy to get into, but you know, at that point, you're probably like, oh, I want comments. I want this. Maybe Tumblr is restrictive. I feel like the Tumblr to WordPress jump is not so bad. So I would definitely check that out. Static site generators, I think all of them, to my knowledge, require knowledge of the command line. So, Kartik, if that's not in your wheelhouse, if that's not your cup of tea, then I would probably steer clear just for the meanwhile. So until
they are very, very, very cool though. If anybody has no idea what we're talking about, and actually Dave's just released blog, DaveRuper.com, is powered by Jekyll, isn't it?
Yeah. So I just put my site from WordPress over to Jekyll, another static site generator, and I love it because I type posts in Markdown and I click save, and then similar to how Sass compiles into CSS, my Markdown files then compile into my website.
A website, right? And then when it goes up to Dave's site, there's no database. There's no, you know, but that's the biggest one, right? So when you request a page, it's just pre-compiled HTML. It's just really fast. It's really secure.
Yep. It's like I sent up my cached web pages to the internet. It's pretty cool.
So this actually, you know, we put this question here on purpose because we have Majingo is one of our sponsors this week. I mentioned at the top. You know, it's screencasts for, like, I like to think of them as intermediate level kind of screencasts, right? There's some kind of beginner stuff in here too, but it's mostly like for, you know, people that listen to the Shop Shock Show, essentially. You know, you guys care enough about web design and development stuff that you're subscribing to a podcast about it, you'll probably be interested in the kind of screencast that Majingo has for sale. Two that are of particular interest here are static websites with Jekyll. Literally, if you're like, I'm interested in the static site generator thing. It sounds really cool. It is really cool. I promise you. You can literally go and buy a screencast from Majingo that walks you through the entire process of building a website with Jekyll. And like Dave said, it kind of, you write in Markdown files. So your blog post is just like a Markdown file in a particular folder. What the heck is Markdown? It's kind of it's like a language that compiles into HTML generally by itself. So you, instead of writing like an H2 tag and then a title and then close H2 tag, in Markdown you would just go like __, title. And then when that Markdown compiles, it turns into an H2 tag. And there's like HTML equivalents for tons of stuff. It doesn't cover all of HTML, but it covers like the important stuff for crafting something like a blog post. So you need to learn Markdown. Markdown is awesome. The new version of CSS Tricks has Markdown everywhere. In the blog post that I write, in the comments section, you can write in Markdown. In the forums, you write in Markdown. Markdown everywhere. It's awesome. It's getting bigger over the years, not smaller. If you want to learn Markdown as well, Majingo has a Basics of Markdown video. So if you the deal they have set up for Shop Talk Show is if you buy static websites with Jekyll and Basics of Markdown, put them both in your cart and use coupon code HOTDRAMA, it knocks some bucks off, so you can get both of these screencasts for only $15. So,
ka-ching.
Yeah, high quality, good screencast. Thanks for Majingo for sponsoring.
All right, so moving on.
Yeah.
The next question is from Clark Pan, and he says, hey, thanks for answering my question on the show. We did that, Clark. I wish I knew which show it was right offhand, but I've already taken the path you guys suggested since I've asked that question many months ago. Guys, you guys are right. Don't sweat the small stuff. Dude, we did it. We're right, Chris. I'm writing to ask if you guys have heard of this tool called CSS Comb. It relates to the question I asked in regards to the Google Style Guide. Okay. All right. Okay. So this tool converts in big, ugly chunks of CSS into beautiful, consistent things of beauty. SAS support is still in beta, but I've noticed a few bugs with the Sublime plugin, but those issues are fixed. Digging around other people's CSS will be a thing of the past. So CSS Comb. So
literally csscomb.com. You can check it out. He's kind of asking, have we heard of it? What do we think about it? It really is pretty cool. Have you seen it?
I know this is my very first experience with it. So I'm going to
put it. I haven't actually got the package for Sublime yet, but I'm going to do it. I bet you can do it in package control.
Yeah.
Hope you can. Okay, here's the deal though. It sorts your CSS, right? So if you're like a little, you like in your style guide, let's say within your company, you decided, hey, we're going to group width and height together. We're going to, you know, or we're going to go alphabetical with our order, whatever you decide. it's nice if everybody adheres to it because it just makes for easy to read code. It, you know, there's not like multiple styles competing against each other, which is just obnoxious at best or confusing at worst. CSS Comb, you just kind of like, you don't have to be that meticulous as you write your CSS. It's nice if you are, but if you're just like going in there and adding a few properties and screwing around and just not, you know, not focusing on the beauty of the CSS at the moment, then you just hit like, okay, CSS Comb, and it'll just go whoop, and it'll reorder everything and restyle it all and kind of clean it up and get things in the right order and all that stuff for.
So like it'll like fix indentation and stuff like that. And
yeah. Whoa. So it sorts your properties in the right way, the order and
Got a plugin for everything, like Sublime Text 2, TextMate, Coda, Coda 2, Espresso, IntelliJ IDEA, which everyone's using. It's the hottest editor I've ever heard of. WebStorm, PyCharm, Notepad++. Wow. That's cool. I'm going to install it and try it out.
Yeah, just run it on a style sheet. Apparently, it doesn't mess with your formatting so much. It just kind of lets that work. Single line or multi-line, no big deal. Yeah, pretty neat. So, well, just, I don't know. It's just a glorified plug for that, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just asking us if we've heard of it or whatever.
That's cool. If it gets SaaS support, I'm down. Like, because
I like the idea of it, yeah.
I it's better than doing it manually, right? Because have you been in that situation where you have to like go through and fix something manually? Mr. Grumbles the whole time. You're like,
certainly not the best use of a developer's time usually.
Precisely. Exactly. This is like outsourcing like to an intern.
And using a computer for what it's good for. You know, this is exactly what computers are for.
They should rename it like CSS intern. That's brilliant. Well, cool. Thanks, Clark, for sharing that. Hopefully people get a lot out of that. That'll be in the show notes. So awesome.
Oh, Nick I asks, I am fairly new to front-end web design. I was curious if there was an index or resource for the visual styles when mocking up in a PSD or how you guys complete that process as a whole. So I kind of just like, I don't know what he, okay, right. I'll finish the question. Yeah. For example, designing a nav bar, if I want to have a certain style or feel, is there a one-stop resource for references or is Google my best friend in this case? So Nick's like, okay, I'm designing in Photoshop. How can I, you know, is there like a button I can press to cycle through all the different styles for nav bars or where do I get inspiration? Where do I find other nav bars to look at?
Well, and so Nick, I am glad you wrote in and asked this question. You might know Matthew Smith at Whale on Twitter from episode 27, the last episode, and episode 41, the even loster episode. sad trombone. So Matthew Smith started a project like this called Pattern Tap. Which then he sold to Zurb, Z-U-R-B, the guys who do the Zurb Foundation framework. So Pattern Tap is pretty awesome. And like I was saying on one of those shows back, this was like my hobby. Like you just go around and see what works like on people's sites. And, you know, you can like go to like, oh, I want to look at pagination buttons and drill down and you like see 100 different examples of pagination buttons. That sort of stuff I think is how you're going to be inspired going forward. I mean, you could just like crack open Twitter Bootstrap and just copy what they did. Cause they've got more or less all the components you'd ever use on a website. But, that's my advice. Do you have anything, Chris?
I did feel like this would be a good time to mention this because he specifically said Photoshop and he specifically said, is there like a good like one-stop shop for this for like getting a nav bar into Photoshop? And I just tried this the other day. It's pretty neat. WebZap.
Yes. That's I was trying to remember what the name of this. Yes.
webzap.uiparade.com. And it's literally like you get an extra panel in Photoshop. So, you know, you have like the character panel and the layers panel and all that stuff. You get a new one that's just called WebZap. And so if you're working on a document, you have a document open, there's like, you can just click on, you know, I'm looking at the navigation right now and there's literally 8, 9, 10, 14 little navigation bars you can go and you just click it. And you're like, I'll have that one, please. And it'll just put it in your document for you.
That's cool. This one's all based on like the 960 grid. So it's kind of like a tried and true form of layout, you know? I'm interested to try this. You have it, Chris. You think it's kind of
clicking buttons right now. It's pretty neat.
So you could build a web page in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, because you're like, I want this button style. I want this navigation style. Paint it up like this. Put some pictures here. It's got full layouts and stuff in there. And they're very like modern feeling layouts. You know, it feels like a website that was designed like last week by, you know, a trendy design firm or something. It runs the risk of tons of websites looking like this. But it doesn't give you the HTML and CSS. You know, somebody's got to build this. But I just, it's very related to the question that Nick I is asking us here. So
yeah,
it's worth checking out. It was $15. I bought it to just to kind of check it out just because I it's our job, really, as podcasters mm-hmm. to
try all the software. No, I've just this has been like on the like list of like, ooh, geez, I'm gonna see how that works. But I think my bottleneck is it's for 960, and I've graduated. I'm full on responsive in most cases. So 960, I just was like, oh, but I'd need responsive. So
are so simple looking, Dave. You it's like
I could probably do it.
Instantly solves the responsive problem. You
know? Yeah, I know. I need to. I'll take it for a drive here. You got my money, okay? You iParade. Okay. How much are they paying you, queer?
Nothing. They should pay us, though.
Hey, you iParade. Get on that. All right.
We have sponsors, and this next question, yeah. Kaboom. This next question leads into a sponsor nicely, too. It just happened good this week. But let's do the question first, and then work it.
John Hole writes in, great show. Question is, I have been teaching myself how to code for about a year, and I've learned a lot from dissecting jQuery plugins, but I'm looking to learn more technical stuff, with the ultimate goal being to understand and code using Backbone.js. Where would a logical starting spot be for learning Backbone, and tips? Any tips?
Good. This is good, actually. I posted something to Google Plus the other day. Yeah, occasionally I use Google Plus. Crazy. Yeah. I got to look at my own profile, though, because I found a video. Where the heck is it? It was called Introduction to Backbone.js. Let's see. Is it going to tell me who did it? It was really, it's good. I feel like it's probably by Addy Osamani. I gotta go to the thing.
It's always him.
No, it's not, but he's got one too. It's by Nick Gauthier, and it's an hour and 33 minutes. And hello. So, yeah, and it's got a GitHub repo that goes with it and a little Heroku application that explains it and stuff. So it's really like he went all out here to try to explain to people what Backbone.js is. So put that in the show notes. That is a very good one to watch. And as I posted on Google+, which is why my mind went there, there's a big comment thread, and people are like, oh, if you like that, you'll like backbonetutorials.com. You might want to check that one out.
That's up your alley.
Yeah. And there's other ones too. Backbonefundamentals.com is literally Addy Osamani's free online book all about Backbone. So there is quite the resources.
I would say also, John Holt, like, that you're going to need to understand a few, like, JavaScript concepts that's like a little deeper than jQuery. Things like what's a model, or what's the module pattern, stuff like that. And once you get those kind of sorted out, then you'll kind of be off to the races. There's this site. If you Google or Bing, whatever your preference is, todos.js. There's a Document Cloud has a GitHub page about it's basically about building a to-do app in every language or something like that, or using every kind of template thing. And so they have a jQuery and Backbone to-do app. So
nice.
And it's like commented, like basically the comments are on the left and the code is on the right, so you kind of like can read through a whole to-do app, actually, and like it's working. Like, you could paste this into your browser and make a to-do app. So
it's sweet.
Yeah, and like all that code's on GitHub. So
this is relevant to our second sponsor, Environments for Humans. They're a longtime great sponsor of the show. Love them. They do two kinds of conferences. They do tons of conferences, more than anybody else in the industry, I think. And they do ones called summits, which are online. So you can, and they're not, you know, they're not worse for it. You know, they're the best people in the industry are the speakers at these summits. And you literally, you know, so you think of the money that you save going to an online conference instead. No plane ticket, no hotel, no, you know, fancy steak dinners or whatever. Like we were saying in the past, you can just, you know, just plop down on a couch, put it up on the big screen, AirPlay it or whatever, and make a bologna sandwich and have a very economical and learn all about JavaScript. They have two coming up of these online summits. One is on November 12th, so super, super quick here. The Mobile JavaScript Summit. So go to mobilejssummit.com and check that one out. It's all about mobile stuff and how it relates to JavaScript, a huge hot topic these days. And then right the next day is just the JavaScript Summit. So all about JavaScript stuff too. A huge name speaking at this thing. And they have a day dedicated just to Backbone.js. So if John is very serious and really wants to deep dive quick here, these conferences aren't that expensive. A one-day ticket's like $179. And you can save 20% off of that by using the discount code ShopTalkShow. So either mobilejssummit.com or just jssummit.com, different days. And if you really want to deep dive into Backbone, they have a whole day of learning dedicated to that with the discount. Getting a good deal. Dave's even going to go, isn't he?
Yeah, dude, I'm attending, so I'm stoked. I mean, I know JavaScript, right? I have tiny jQuery plugins. That's my MO. But man, I was just looking at the list of people, and I was just like, this is too good to pass up. I just want to be sure I can catch these guys. And you know, it's like Addy and Rebecca Murphy, and you know, like these are. Titans of JavaScript that you want to hear from. So I'm gonna just kind of eavesdrop. I mean, I'm you know, I'm savvy, but you know, I can always level up. So that's sort of my big thing. So I'm gonna be like spending my free time here now that I got the blog out the door, just leveling up my JavaScript, make sure I got all the, you know, just practice makes perfect, really. So yeah.
Good. Thanks for sponsoring Environments for Humans. You know, they also do in-person conferences as well. So both me and Dave in early December will be at incontrolconference.com. So if mm-hmm. you're interested in that and want to come out and see us in Hawaii and have a heck of a vacation, check that one out too.
Awesome.
Chick, chick, boom. Adam Davidson writes in, there are a few websites such as Squarespace that are starting to pop up, which provide the client with nicely designed websites at very affordable prices. And more of these sites become available. Do you see them as becoming a problem for web designers in the future? We actually, in our Lost episode, we actually had a good conversation about this, but I put it in here on purpose because I think it's interesting. That's on a lot of designers' minds, I think, like these website building apps like Squarespace and Verb and, even stuff like WordPress.com, you know, they have very nice templates on there. You can make a very professional looking website really quickly. That can accommodate quite a few clients, I think. But what's the deal? Are they going to put web designers out of business, or what's up?
It's a hot question. I mean, for me, and this is sort of where I come down to it is, you know, if you're looking, if you go to like ThemeForest or something like that, and these designs are better than yours, and they threaten your business. Or if you go to Squarespace and like, you know, you could be threatened and, you know, like a Squarespace site can cut you 3,000% or something, you know, like then, yeah, maybe that is dangerous. You know, I think web designers, like with the capital W and a capital D, need to figure out what value they're adding to the web design. Like why is custom better than just a bunch of themes and stuff like that? So I honestly don't think it's gonna put anyone out of business in my opinion. But you know, at the same time, it's like, you know, maybe if these web designs are way better than you can do, maybe you need to get better at selling Squarespace sites, like, you know, to your clients. So that's my thought. What do you think, Chris?
I think that same thing. I think, okay. It's not even necessarily you need to like out design Squarespace, but there's so many things that also go on a website, like, copy. You have to write good copy. You have to take good photographs. You have to, mm-hmm. You have to solve whatever that client's problem is. You know, you have to go, you have to talk to that client like a human being, like a website can't talk to a person, figure out what the problems they're trying to solve, why they need a website in the begin with, help them through that process, get them something online. They need professionals to help get them there. And if the tool you, if something like Squarespace is just one of those tools that you use to get them a final website, that's fine. But, your professional personality and holding their hand through this whole process is what's valuable.
Yeah. I guess that's to say, like, nice design, like looking cool, does not equal like a good web design. If that makes sense. Like, yeah, that's how I'm going to put that. That's really deep at what I just said there. I feel like you got to be sure you're adding value. I mean. I think of like something like WordPress, how you can just like create menus and start adding links and stuff like that, like I can drop that into a website, but and like it can be designed and spaced out like that. But where the true design is when I tell the client, only make 5 of these. Like limit the number of links to 5 and you'll have happy users and you yourself will look like you know what you're doing with your life, so that, I mean, stuff like that, and I don't actually say that to clients exactly, but like if your client has like unlimited control, they can in theory just, they'll just start adding stuff, they don't have that like user focused design sensibility because they're too busy running their actual business really well. I think your value is going to be in all those other little places that is beyond like cool graphics. So
totally. They might even help you make more money, these things, because you can kind of skip some of building a navigation that you've built 50 times in the past and everything, and help them with the important part of it.
Well, I was saying on the Lost episode that I have an idea for a blog and I am, I want to do this blog on accessibility, and some people who've listened to the Shop Talk show have already said, hey, I want help, and that's awesome. I'm still just getting things kind of figured out. That to me is, I mean, I could spend a month or 2 months designing the perfect website, but I should probably just use a theme because the content is important, and then use my style sensibilities to just make sure the content is under control and usable and nice rather than over focusing on the design stuff. So. Yeah, that's, I might just use Bootstrap or something like that. So I don't know. There you go. Something to think about, huh?
Yep.
All right, cool. Boom. Jake Boob wrote in. Bob, I'm just going to call it Bob, wrote in and said, hey, I have a product grid with divs and I'm trying to spread it out evenly with margins to go to the edge of the parent element. It seems like a simple script, but my math isn't working quite so well. Is there a JavaScript plugin somewhere that does this? I was told about masonry, but that doesn't spread out the elements, which is what I'm going for. Any thoughts?
It's just like a grid. He just says, I need a grid, but my math isn't working out. I actually have a screencast and a blog post and stuff that I've been just, I kind of share this really simple way that I've been making grids lately. I kind of, I call it don't overthink it grids. That's just a really simple, it's basically float based still, because that's still where we're at with this. Again, Flexbox is going to be a very big deal in making this very, very easy. Mm-hmm. However, we're not quite there yet. We're still in the world of floats a little bit for maybe another year. But making a grid with floats with percentages isn't that hard. I think you just take a look at the screencast, Jake, and I think you'll figure it out just fine. Masonry is a whole different ball game. It's for, you know, masonry is like a play on like brick layout, you know, so there's like little rectangles of different heights essentially, and they kind of lay themselves out in a way that floats really aren't able to do. So if that's what you need, like kind of Pinterest style is a good way to look at it if you're familiar with the layout there. Mm-hmm. If you need that, then use masonry. It's great. But if you're just trying to lay out a grid, floats and percentages are still your friend, and it's really not that hard of a thing to do. So
I have a post called Uncle Dave's Flexi Image Grid. Or it's actually just a code pen. So, yeah, you could check that out too. But it's not as simple as Chris's thing. So you should probably use Chris's thing. I could make this a little better, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, check that out.
There you go.
Last one. We're going to do one more. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go.
Can you do the name though? You're good at the name.
Yeah. I'm just going to say it's Macy Sawinski, Macy with a J at the end. So wrote in, you want to read it? Or?
Sure. Can you guys tell once and forever, is indenting -9,999 pixels dangerous or not? I feel like we talked about this in the first question. Anyway, yeah. Is there any chance the website can be blacklisted by Google because you hid this or that? How much do you have to accidentally hide to be considered a real SEO pirate? Is there any difference to this matter, whether you indent something or make it hidden with any other trick? So just, if you're just hearing this, you know, scroll back to the beginning of the show and we talked about this kind of thing. You don't need to worry about it if your heart is in the right place. If you're trying to hide it because you need to replace it with an image because that makes sense in your website, not a big deal. And don't worry about being blacklisted. I think that's that would be a rare day.
Yeah. I would not worry about it. I was thinking about this during the first question, so I thought I'd like go check it out. Apple.com, right? You've heard of them. So they do a lot of image replacement because I think they use like a custom Helvetica or something like that for their website all over the place. And like they're picky, so they want to make sure it shows up right. They use straight image tags with alt attributes that say the actual words on the image. So, Google's not going to be blacklisting Apple for using text-based images, right? Right. I mean, maybe they are because they're competitors, but, people want to go to the Apple site. So when you Google iPad, you go to the iPad site, you know? So, I guess I'm just citing that to say, like, you know, if you're worried about a text indent or whatever, then just use an image, right? With an alt tag. Or, I don't know.
I think that's good enough.
Yeah,
that's a good answer, and don't sweat it too hard. So, all right, thanks everybody for listening to our super rapid fire episode. We'll be back to our kind of normal schedule soon. We got lots of good shows coming up, so. I don't know.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. And then, keep submitting questions, please.
Love y'all, folks. ShopTalkShow.com.